flying something that fast, but so minuscule. You put one little bit, you know, of too much elevator, or put too much aileron in, and you overrolled, and now you have to slow the roll rate back down, you know, stuff like that. It makes it really difficult.
Hello and welcome to the Skybound RC podcast. Today we have part two of my conversation with Jace Ducia. If you missed part one, make sure to go check it out. In this part two, Jace details his full process of how to set up a new airplane. Mixes, center of gravity, dual rates, exponentials. Additionally, he will dive a bit deeper into the specifics around setting up a new biplane like the Flex Mamba or Ultimate. He will also talk about how he uses the simulator for training. And he will even detail some of the specific tips he has for snap rolls or rifle rolls, things like that, and how to improve your skill if you're still not comfortable with those type of maneuvers. I think this episode is packed with a lot of useful information if you're interested in RC aerobatics, 3D, iMac flying, and in general, you're aiming to improve your flight skills and you want to understand how a top-level pilot thinks about flying and setup. I hope you enjoy it. As you were progressing with your flying, was there any point that you felt you made a significant leap? Like, to give you an example, myself, back when I was flying competition in Spain, I would fly with 40% Krill model airplanes. They were great for iMac. They were not best freestyle planes in the sense that they're like fairly heavy, fairly sluggish, fairly slow. So outside of the precision maneuvers and the kind of relatively basic 3D maneuvers, it was hard to go past that. At some point, I built a Hangar 9 35% extra, and I feel like that triggered like a big leap in my flying skills because the airplane was able to handle much more aggressive maneuvers, faster roll rates. Do you see anything like that in the past, you know, 10 years on your flying, whether it's like a particular airplane that unlocked some capabilities, particular event that might have inspired you to try certain maneuvers? Was there anything like that?
Yeah, I would say, you know, it's been a little while now, pretty much about 10 years ago, when I first started competing in XFC, the setup that I had, you know, we still had a big learning curve to go on the setup. So the setup wasn't the most high performance when I first started flying in XFC. And, you know, I did fairly well my first couple of years, and I was able to make it into the finals, and I learned a lot, you know, flying with everyone. But there came a point between 2013 and 2014 that I made a big change to the setup of the airplane and just made it, you know, the setup a lot lighter. And it's basically, you know, the same setup I have now, just with, you know, evolved products and technology. So that's when I first started, you know, running the PowerSafe system, you know, no separate power expanders, lighter batteries, less amount of batteries too, you know, lighter setup overall. And it really helped out my flying. So that coupled in with, you know, a really big focus and, you know, I'd say a leap in development and skills. I think from 2013 to 2014, between those two XFCs, I think has been probably one of my biggest jumps. And I think after I made that jump, to 2014, it's given me a lot of confidence since then too. So I think that was definitely a big turning point in my opinion. So even though the airframes, basically to recap that a little bit, even though the airframes were the same, it was basically, you know, a whole different setup, you know, more efficient, lighter weight, and that helped a lot.
Interesting. You mentioned competition before. I know that you did a bit of competing in iMac at some point, right? What was the kind of mindset around getting started in iMac and then switching to fully focused on freestyle?
Yeah, so actually the freestyle flying, that probably caught my interest first at a super young age. I was like 7 or 8 years old, and I went and spectated at XFC, and I'd seen some videos online of some 3D flying and freestyle competitions, and that's what really caught my interest at a young age, to get into that, or not get into it, but have an interest in that sort of flying. So as I, started spectating a little more and doing a little more research about it, messing around with stuff on the flight simulator, I learned about iMac I learned that iMac was really easy for anyone to get into and didn't really cost anything, to fly basic. You could pretty much fly any airplane, even though I had some giant scale planes at the time, I didn't need, a 200cc or 150cc airplane to compete in basic. So, I started to do iMac, just to kind of learn about, aerobatics in general. It's definitely an understatement, for what ended up happening for sure. And so I flew a few years of iMac, never really got super huge into it. But I learned a lot, had a lot of fun. I learned a lot of the fundamentals of precision, presentation and centering and, wind correction, what the judges are looking for and all that sort of thing. And all the meanwhile, I would do some of the freestyle competitions at iMac contests as well. And each time I would do that, I would just, love the freestyle stuff more and more. And then a contest came along called the King 50. And the King 50 was a contest for 50cc sized airplanes. And it was a special sort of freestyle contest because it gave so many people, up-and-coming people, an opportunity on the big stage, so to speak. So, a lot of big names that you see now kind of had experience at King 50 or kind of got their foot in the door a little bit with that. And, with a 50cc plane, the airplanes are somewhat affordable. So that the accessibility there was pretty nice as well. So I did that for a couple years and just competing in that really helped the progress a little bit, and I learned a lot there. And then I got to the point to where I wanted to try XFC, and I was about 11 or 12 years old when I wanted to try XFC, and at that point I decided for the upcoming season to put 100% of my practice into freestyle for XFC, and that's kind of when I stopped iMac, but all that, fundamentals from iMac have definitely helped in freestyle, from a precision standpoint, a lot of the judging, is the same. If something's not centered right in a freestyle, or you miss a point in a freestyle, or the lines are a little off in a freestyle, the judges will probably pick up on that. So, there's a lot of similarities for sure.
Yep. How do you feel about the future of freestyle in general, and I guess more specifically here in the U.S.? Like, the reason I ask this is because, for example, this year, I believe there's no major freestyle competition, right? There's no XFC, there's no Tucson Robotics Shootout with its freestyle. How are you feeling about that?
Yeah, it's definitely unfortunate. I think this year would be pretty cool to do a freestyle contest, with the new plane. So that's definitely, unfortunate. I think I'm optimistic that maybe next year will be different, and maybe, the shootout can come back next year or something else. From the U.S., it seems like it's slowed down a little bit. One thing I would say for freestyle is, I hope if it picks up again, I hope that there's still a lot of focus towards the choreography standpoint and precision standpoint, and not so much a contest of stick banging or crazy lucky saves or that sort of thing. I hope it's still focused on precision and choreography, because that's I think that's where people grow as pilots. I think people get the most satisfaction out of doing well in that sort of contest, because it takes more work behind the scenes and more practice behind the scenes, you know, to make the music match up perfectly and presentation, you know, appeal and everything. So I hope those aspects come back in the future. I will say that, you know, internationally in Europe and other countries, there's been, you know, still a good amount of interest in freestyle. It's cool to see that. You know, I think in Europe, there's a lot of freestyle pilots. You know, last year's FXFC had 40 pilots. So there's definitely still a lot of interest in that. And the contests are run really well. You know, there's a lot of people that step up and volunteer their time to help run it. You know, that's a big thing. I think it'd be cool to get some more people in the U.S. to step up and you know, for the passion of the hobby and promotion to help with this stuff. I think it's definitely possible, for sure. You know, doesn't have to be done over the top. You know, a lot of money doesn't always have to be invested. You know, it always takes some, but, you know, it doesn't have to be anything super crazy. I think, you know, judges are a big key. You know, we always need, you know, judges to devote their time and volunteer their time. So I think it's possible, for sure. And hopefully, you know, someone's out there and cooking up an idea right now as we speak.
Yep. One good thing about this type of flying is that, worst case, you always can do demo flights. Like, if you don't have an IMAC competition, it's probably not great to just go to some event and start doing your, like, 8-minute pattern routine. You can put a really good demo flight anytime, and people will definitely appreciate that. And actually, speaking of, one thing I was going to mention, your competition freestyle routines are obviously very good. They've given you really good results over time. I have to say, I'm even more impressed with your demo flights, your typical 8-minute or so demo flight you put out in a Yonel or something like that. And the reason I say that is because I can see how, I mean, for myself at least, you have a lot of time to prepare a 4-minute musical freestyle that you take to a competition, and you can plan all the moves, you can plan the synchronization with the music, you can make sure that things are going to align correctly and they're going to be centered properly. In one of these demo flights that feel more improvised, at least for me personally, I have a much harder time kind of thinking on the fly, what maneuvers should I do next? What have I done so far? What would go well right now? And every time I see your demo flights, I'm really, really impressed, because you are able to fly them with extreme precision, obviously very close to the ground and with a lot of aggression. And it's a non-stop routine with a lot of really impressive maneuvers. So, one, awesome job there. Two, I'm curious, do you do any type of prep ahead for those type of demos, in terms of, do you have a general outline of what the flight is going to look like? I think sometimes I've even seen you doing certain maneuvers kind of to the beat of the music on certain occasions, not like a proper full freestyle routine where everything is like with the music, but there's some parts of it that is clearly intentionally going with the music. So what's your approach for those type of flights?
Well, I appreciate it. I think with the demo flights and everything, you know, nothing is planned out. It's all improvising. And I think with flights like that, it's a little bit easier to position everything, especially if it's on a windy day. Like, when you have a 4-minute freestyle and everything's planned out and it's windy, it's harder to make it, you know, position the same every time. So with these, you know, 8-minute demo flights, I think everything is always positioned perfectly, because, you know the wind and you're naturally correcting it, and you won't do something if you feel like it's going to get blown further away. But as far as the music goes, the only preparation I do is, you know, I'll put, you know, two or three songs together within, you know, an 8-minute window. And I think song choice is the biggest key. If you have a song that you're really you know, you really feel it, you know, while you're flying, and you're really familiar with it, and you're familiar with the beats and the tempo and everything, I think naturally you do stuff that's with the music. And, you know, I spend a lot of time on the, you know, the flight simulator. Whenever I'm on the flight simulator, just messing around, I'm playing music too. So I think that kind of stems from that a little bit. You know, just kind of naturally flying with the music at some points and might not even realize it. So, yeah, as far as the demo flights go, it, you know, nothing's planned out. It's all improvisation. And, I think the biggest thing is just having music that I really like and really familiar with.
Speaking of the simulator, I know you always mention sim practice being like really, really big for you. How useful do you find it beyond learning a new maneuver or building that type of muscle memory for a new maneuver? Do you find it still useful to get used to timing of inputs, to get used to, I think personally speaking, one of the things I run into often is that simulator is extremely useful for either learning a new maneuver or kind of getting comfortable with the precision side of certain maneuvers. Once you start looking at more specific timing of inputs, inertia of the plane, things like that, it's pretty different from your actual plane, like even two different planes, slightly different models, slightly different setup. In real life, it's going to be different. So when you are looking at the level of precision that you are aiming for, how does that play a factor for you?
Yeah, you know, with the simulator, like you said, I think the biggest thing is the muscle memory and individual inputs, especially for precision. I think that's where the simulator comes in the biggest for precision and timing, and, you know, some of the rolling maneuvers and everything will benefit nicely from sim time. But, you know, anything gyroscopic or the tumbling and everything, that feels way different, you know, even with slower 3D, it feels way different. So the feel of the airplane won't necessarily be there on the simulator, but just the muscle memory alone will do a lot more than what people think. You know, you can still learn the inputs for maneuvers. The timing out of the field with the real airplane just might make, you know, a couple tries to get it right. But if you learn a maneuver on the simulator, chances are the inputs are going to be the same or pretty close. And then you try it with a real airplane and just a few small adjustments, you know, you might have to try it two or three times, but then you'll get it. But it's hugely beneficial for sure. You know, I can feel if I take some time off and don't fly in the simulator and then, you know, get back on the simulator or go and fly a, you know, an actual airplane, it takes a couple flights to really get the feel and locked in with the airplane again. But I can go probably quite some time without flying an actual airplane, like a giant scale airplane, and just fly on the simulator for a while, and I feel pretty locked in with the airplane, you know, right out the gate. So I think it makes a big difference, even though the energy and inertia of the airplane isn't exactly there. You know, I always tell people it's better than nothing. You know, it's not perfect, but it's better than nothing for sure.
Are you still using that, I think it's an extra 330 edit?
Yeah, it's a extra 330 SC is the name of the original file. And I think it's called Extra 330 Jace or something like that. It's on the Knife Edge software pages, so I think people are able to find it and download it. I've actually been using that airplane for quite some time now, and it's still probably, in my opinion, the closest to a real 3D plane on the sim. I've made a few adjustments here and there, but I think the weight and momentum and everything are pretty close. And one thing about the simulator I'd like to mention is some people might not know this, but you can adjust the physics speed on there. So if you're wanting to learn an individual maneuver, you know, let's say a rolling Harrier or a rifle roll or anything that requires, you know, really quick but precise timing, you can slow the physics speed way down And so the airplane will be moving really slow. And so you can fly it at a slow pace, and it makes the timing a lot easier. And then as you get comfortable, you can slowly turn the physics back up.
Yep. Yeah, that's super useful. Especially those people that are looking at those like rifle rolls and they want to
get there. If you try the rifle rolls and you're at 100% physics, it's going to take a long time, you know, to learn that. But if you turn the physics down, it'll still take you a while, but it'll give you more of a direction, and it won't be totally worthless.
Yep.
Yeah.
Is there any areas of your flying right now that you would want to improve? Is there anything that you feel like there's still clear room for improvement?
For sure. Yeah. I think there's definitely massive room for improvement. You know, even some of my stronger points, I think could still improve on. You know, I think just coming down to, you know, I'm still getting used to the airplanes a little bit, the newer airplanes, but, you know, I'm, overall, it's not taking, you know, a whole lot of getting used to, but there's still some capabilities of the airplanes to be found out. But, you know, as far as any areas in specific, you know, I just try to always be somewhat innovative. So, I think some of the, you know, more foamy like maneuvers that you see people do nowadays, I think it's, pretty impressive to see what the airplanes can do. And I think there's always, room to improve and some of the post-stalled stuff, you know, kind of in between 3D and aggressive flying, some of those, types of maneuvers, where the airplane's kind of loaded up a little bit. It's always cool to play around there, but I mean, I think there's always room for improvement across the board, you know, even with something as simple and generic and timeless as a snap roll. You know, I don't think anyone has perfected a snap, because everyone still misses them every now and then. So
there's, I don't know, man, I haven't seen you missing many in the videos I've seen.
It happens. I think it's a pretty interesting fundamental of, you know, everyone's been doing that maneuver for so many years, but that just goes to show that, you know, there's no such thing as a perfect flight. You know, everything can be perfected at least a little bit.
One of the things I've noticed on your flights that I haven't seen much at all elsewhere is the way you stop the snap roll. I believe that most people, at the highest level, pilots will do their snap roll. So usually some elevator input, some rudder, and usually full aileron, right? And then they will neutralize everything, maybe the rudder a little bit before, maybe the elevator a little bit before, but eventually they will neutralize everything slightly ahead of the airplane desired final position. But what I see in your flights is that you actually will often apply counter aileron, kind of to actually stop the plane once it's gotten to that position. So rather than account for the inertia and stop early, it seems like you let the airplane go to where you want it, and then you will stop it with a very small amount of opposite aileron. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is. You know, that sometimes applies to snap rolls, point rolls, even, you know, stopping a rifle roll. I think it gives it somewhat of a more crisp look, and it makes it, you know, appear really aggressive, you know, on the stop. And like you said, it's all about the inertia, because once you go to the point where you want to stop, and you just neutralize it, like you said, you know, you're probably going to over-rotate because of the momentum and inertia. So having that little bit of counter, I think, makes it a little more crisp. I wouldn't say it helps make it any easier. I wouldn't say it makes it easier to stop where you want it to at all. It's just more of a presentation thing.
Yeah, no, they definitely look very crisp. Is that something that you actually are able to replicate in the sim?
As to some extent, you know, not exactly. I think as eventually it becomes a habit, so you start doing it on the sim. I think the sim probably doesn't require it as much. You know, the airplane always seems to feel a little bit lighter on the wings, and you're able to stop it, you know, really aggressive anyways. So, you know, it almost feels like a foamy on the simulator. So, probably don't need to do it as much. Sometimes, you know, even with a giant scale plane, find myself, you know, overcorrecting a little too much and, you know, end up missing it or something. So that happens on the sim sometimes, but, yeah, I think it's just one of those things. Once it becomes a habit, you start doing it with everything.
We have talked a lot of how good your flying is, which it is. But to bring you back to the ground a little bit so that people don't think that you're some alien, are you able to give us a bit of kind of some scoop of what was like your worst crash? I know that everybody crashes, whether it's like a mechanical failure, electrical issue, thumbs don't do what they were supposed to. Are you able to give us some bad crash?
Yeah, I think there's been a, you know, obviously a good variety of crashes throughout the years, whether it be, you know, mechanical or pilot error. I think some of the more bigger crashes that cause a lot of damage would be some of the mechanical ones, you know, at high speed and something breaks. You know, a lot of times it, some of the more dumb thumbs or pilot errors, it totals the airplane, but it's just, it breaks the airplane just enough to where it's totaled. But I think one of the more specific ones, you know, from the pilot, I can, you know, list off countless crashes, but one of the more specific ones that comes to mind, a pilot error based crash, was when I was in Brazil one year, and I was flying an extra 300, and they had the field was really unique. You know, it was really visual appealing, but it kind of sloped up a little bit. The terrain sloped up from the far edge of the runway. It sloped up. And there's a lot of small trees around and a lot of bushes, and then way further out, you know, probably another 200 yards out, if not more, there are some taller trees, and there was one really tall tree out there, and myself and a lot of other pilots were messing with it a little bit and flying around it and doing all sorts of stuff, flying around it and coming back. And this was my second or third year at the event, so I was pretty confident with the tree, and maybe a little bit too confident. But and this was a couple days into the event, and I'm flying it, and I'm doing a rifle roll, heading straight out, and wanting to do like a rifle roll circle around the tree and come back, and just came in a little too short and hit it square on, and the airplane shredded through the trees, the fuse, you know, broke in half, and both wings came off, and I think half the plane ended up, you know, going through the branches and on the ground, and probably the aft half of the airplane stayed up in the trees, and it was a tall tree too, so I don't think that airplane was coming down anytime soon.
Well, there's some piece of just this airplane in some tree in Brazil.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, there's probably still something out there. Who knows?
Is there any particular maneuver that you feel like has been the hardest to perfect, or a couple of maneuvers?
You know, everything is really difficult to perfect. As far as one that always stands out to me is one that, like, a one roll rolling circle or a one roll rolling loop is always really difficult. It seems like the conditions are always different and inconsistent, you know, whether it be the wind or the airplane you're flying. You learn when you try a one roll rolling loop, for example, and a one roll rolling circle, you kind of learn a little bit about everything, you know, when to put in the rudder. You know, you got the rudder at both angles, the elevator correction, and you're trying to carve, you know, perfect geometry and center the roll as well. So I think you learn, you know, a little bit about roll timing with the tail and also the presentation and positioning. So that's always something that's really difficult. It takes a lot of focus throughout the maneuver. It's a long maneuver, so you're always focused in on it throughout the whole time, and you know, just one little bobble will mess it all up. So it's really, I think what makes it so difficult, in my opinion, is the duration of the maneuver and how spot on you have to be throughout the entire thing.
Yeah, at least for me, one thing I definitely feel with those type of maneuvers is that the downside of having a single rate that goes all the way from precision to like very aggressive 3D is that doesn't give you a lot of margin of error on your sticks, right? Like you have, right. You're making like minuscule, like very, very tiny corrections. And as soon as you go a bit over, the airplane will go way out of the line.
Exactly. Yep. That's just it. You know, flying something that fast, but so minuscule, you put one little bit, you know, of too much elevator or put too much aileron in and you overrolled and now you have to slow the roll rate back down, you know, stuff like that. It makes it really difficult, but, you know, anything other than that, you know, as far as the more rapid and aggressive maneuvers go, you know, just being able to, you know, tie everything together and not get it too sloppy. You know, if you're doing a lot of snaps in a row, being able to hit every one of them and not get crossed up and being able to, you know, keep the pitch break for every snap, you know, back and forth, you know, between positive and negative. Some of the more rapid snap combos are pretty difficult too. So, there's a lot of more difficult maneuvers in there, but, I think those are always ones that always come to mind.
Diving a bit more into like those type of technical details. What is your typical procedure to dial in a new plane? Especially now, it's probably a good example now that you are switching to a completely different airframe with the flex airplanes, so you don't have like a very good idea of what the right expos are, what type of mixes to use, if you use any.
Yeah. So I think I'll talk about the biplanes a little bit because that's more different than what I'm used to. You know, with the Edge, it's pretty much the same setup, same throws that I've used in the past. You know, the airplane's really comparable. But I think with the biplanes, the biggest difference as far as setup goes is the aileron throws. You know, obviously the rolling performance is going to be a lot different with a biplane. I'm actually running a little bit less throw on the ailerons of a biplane than I would a monoplane. And that's because with the added ailerons, if you're to run the same amount of throw, it's going to act like an air brake. And at high speed, the roll rate's going to slow down. So in the Ultimate 70 and Mamba 120, I think we're, you know, between 32 and 34 degrees. Or like on the Edge, we're at about 37 or 38 degrees on the ailerons. So I think, you know, for the first couple flights of an airplane, the first thing I do is obviously, you know, trim it out, make sure it's trimmed. And one thing I do, speaking of trims, is I'll go into the radio function and I'll turn the trim steps down to my preference. Normally stock out of the box, the radio, you know, it jumps a lot between trims. So if you turn the trim step down, you're able to fine tune the trims a little bit more. So I'll do that. And then once the airplane's trimmed out, I'll test the CG. And normally that's a combination of the 45 line test where you pull to a 45 and roll inverted and then, you know, inverted straight and level flight. And, that's not the only thing, you know, just flying the airplane around and doing some of the maneuvers of your flying style will help test CG as well. And you can adjust from there. And basically, with the airplanes and technologies nowadays, if the CG's off, you just have to move the batteries around and should be able to get it right on par. But then as far as mixing goes, after the trim and CG is dialed in, I'll normally do a knife edge mix. That's the only mix that I run is a knife edge mix. So they'll have rudder to elevator to aileron. Normally, on pretty much every aerobatic airplane, if you roll it knife edge, it's going to couple towards the landing gear. So it's going to push and roll a little bit towards the landing gear. So normally you'll want to use opposite aileron and up elevator in your knife edge mix. So that's the only mix that I run. Travels are, maxed out on the tail. And as far as expo goes, it's normally around 50%, between 45 and 55% for everything. So, and just fine tune in between that as I fly the airplane more. But as far as radio setup, that's pretty much it. I think people are starting to learn this more and more now, but if you run too much aileron throw for faster, more aggressive flying, it's actually going to slow the roll rate down as for the high-speed rolls, like the rifle rolls and stuff. So I think, like I said, for the monoplanes, you're talking 37, 38 degrees, and I found for the bipes, probably around between 32 and 34.
You mentioned center of gravity tests, like the inverted horizontal line or inverted climbing 45. What is the typical feel you are looking for there? I know you will actually fine tune it later once you test different maneuvers on how it feels. But if you are focused on those two tests, are you looking for a bit of you need to add a little bit of down elevator to keep it in line? Are you looking for like the airplane just keeps going?
Yeah. So normally if the airplane's flying inverted, I like to breathe on the down elevator a little bit. So I like when the feel is that it requires a little bit of down elevator inverted. And then on a 45, line, if you pull it up and roll to a 45, normally, if the airplane is balanced to my liking, it'll follow a couple fuse lengths and then eventually start to dive off and bird it a little bit. So I think, in my opinion, a good balanced airplane inverted, you'll want to, be on the down elevator a little bit, nothing too crazy, but hands off inverted would be too tail heavy.
So one of your star maneuvers are the rifle rolls, obviously. they're really fast. How well can you see the plane? Like, I think the videos is hard to appreciate because frame rate of the cameras. did you ever have a concern that you might, like, I know the muscle memory is good enough that you don't have any problem doing the right move. I think the concern is more, are you able to actually keep track of the plane position with your eyes? Does it always feel 100% in control?
Yeah, the giant scale airplanes are definitely super locked in. The roll rate there is really comfortable on the giant scale airplanes. Some of the foamies and some of the smaller airplanes, you get closer to the verge of not being able to keep up with it. It's definitely takes a lot of visual demand to know where you are. I mean, that's the only way to stop, knife edge or inverted or upright. So with the bigger airplanes, I'd say it's a comfortable pace. And then some of the smaller foamy stuff is a little bit more, takes a little bit more focus. And of course the airplane is smaller too, so it's a little harder to see, especially when you're further out. But even if you take a bigger airplane and you fly it, after the sunset and or start silhouetting or something like that, it can be harder to keep up with. And night flying is a whole other thing too. That takes a little bit of getting used to for fast rolls at night. So I think it all depends on what you're used to. But the foamies, since they roll the fastest, are really good practice. And if you can keep up with a foamy, you can probably keep up with a bigger airplane.
Yeah. Yeah, I recently tried night flying the bigger plane, the 105 Sleek, with the lights and the wings. It's a pretty different experience. I was surprised actually how not hard the rifle rolls were. I think I think because the lights are like popping up so clearly, you can use the lights themselves as the reference, even if you don't see the airplane that well.
For sure. Yeah, the night flying with the lights on the airplane is, it takes some getting used to, but it's not very difficult at all. You know, the rifle rolls are really manageable still. I think some of the more difficult flying, especially, you know, for rifle rolls specifically, is when you fly under like a light tower and you don't have lights on the airplane and you fly under the floodlights. I think some of the rolling maneuvers are more difficult there, you know, especially when you're rolling towards you or if there's a dead spot between the lights and the airplane passes through it. I think overall it kind of makes the airplane a little more blurry when you fly under the lights. Everything's blurred and the airplane looks like it's rolling faster than what it actually is. Mm-hmm. So it makes it a little more difficult there.
Well, I think we've used a lot of your time already. Let's do one last question, which is, do you have any final advice for those people that are interested in RC aerobatics, whether it's getting started or they've been doing it for a while and they just want to improve, obviously more with a focus on freestyle?
Yeah, I think, you know, like I stated earlier, the biggest thing is passion. If you have passion for it, you're going to find that you pick stuff up and learn stuff without even realizing it or trying to. And then I think everyone can be really thankful of all the resources that are out there today. You know, all the online resources, all the technology and the products. You know, I think there's a lot of people out there that are able to lend their experiences to help people. And I think the biggest thing is just, you know, having fun and enjoying it. You know, if you don't, you know, become super successful in competition or, you know, get a ton of sponsors and all that stuff, and, you know, it's not the end of the world, you know, as long as you're having fun and enjoying it, and then you've already reached the goal. So that's what it's all about.
That's what it's all about, having fun. That's correct.
Exactly.
Pretty well said. Yep. Well, thank you so much, Jess, for joining us and all this good info. I think people watching or listening will really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Thanks for the invite. I'm looking forward to seeing this one when it's posted and looking forward to seeing the future episodes of this one too. Appreciate it.